hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
And now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is AT&T Sportsnet host and TNT guest Hall of Famer, Paul Alexander. Paul hosts the pre- and post-game shows for the Pirates and the Penguins, and you can find him on AT&T Sportsnet. You can also hear him on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh as well, doing some shows there. And like we always say about Paul, nobody knows Pittsburgh sports as well as Paul does. And like I say, he's a member of our 2016 guest Hall of Fame, and we're very excited. He is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Paul, Chris, and Bob, Happy New Year.
Hi, Paul.
Gentlemen, happy 2020.
Same
feels
to
like
you.
Hindsight in a weird way.
That's right. So, Paul, now before we get into all the Pittsburgh sports stuff, I just want to check on you. How's your son? How's he doing?
He's doing great, thanks. Broke his collarbone skiing. We decided that surgery was probably the best bet. It was a pretty displaced break. So, yeah, he's at home resting, and he's doing well. But thank you so much for asking. He's good.
That's good. So, Paul, I think it was sort of a semi-miracle that the Steelers stayed in the playoff hunt as long as they did, considering, you know, all the issues at quarterback and on the offensive line. And Devlin Hodges was certainly a great story for a few weeks. But your thoughts on where do the Steelers go from here?
Well, I mean, football's a crazy game. And certainly in the NFL, I mean, who'd have thought as we head into the Final Four this weekend that, you know, the five most prolific passing teams this year in terms of yardage, they all missed the playoffs. You know, this had become a passing league. It's all about throwing the ball. I mean, now, you know, you better play defense and run the ball. I mean, we're going back to, we're going back to 70s football, for heaven's sakes. And, you know, going into this season, you know, the Steelers 2 years ago, you know, the offense with AB and Le'Veon Bell and Big Ben and, you know, the Killer Bees, and all they needed was a decent defense to, you know, contend for a Super Bowl, for another Lombardi. That's all they needed. And now all they really need is a proficient offense to go along with that Super Bowl defense. Finally, all of those first-round picks that they've compiled on that defense, some great additions through free agency, Mason comes to mind, and, you know, Joe Hayden comes to mind, but they really just need to get Ben back. They need to find a couple of targets. I think they have a couple. They need to find a solid running back. James Conner, as much as I love his story, I love the fact that he just can't stay healthy. And to me, once that's been established, you need to move on from that. You can't continue to say when he's healthy, because what you're saying is he's never healthy. The conversation with Ben, I think, has to be, listen, we can't lead the league in interceptions this year. And I don't know how that's going to go. They just made a really interesting hire, Matt Canada, former Pitt guy, great offensive mind. He's going to be now the Steelers won 2 years without a quarterback's coach. That's fine when Ben's healthy and he's at the helm. But when you have guys like Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges, you need a quarterback coach, and didn't have one. So that was exposed. So I think they've also inserted a fresh pair of eyes to take a look at the offense, which is always, you know, helpful to me. I think that makes a whole lot of sense. He's a great offensive mind, great addition. So yeah, the troubling part was, you know, everyone gives Mike Tomlin and the Steelers like, oh, what a wonderful story. They stay competitive. They were still in it. You don't blow the final three games. You don't lose to the New York Jets. Nothing to play for. Those three losses, in my opinion, were, they kind of put a real sour taste in my mouth that, you know what? You were playing with house money and you still folded. Like, why would you fold? I mean, make something happen. And even the defense, it really wasn't there. As it should have been toward the end of the year either. So, it really sputtered toward the end for me. You know, they started the year 0-3, and then they finished the year with three straight losses. That's not a good start. It's really not a good finish.
Yeah, and to that point, Paul, and I think a lot of Steeler fans feel the same way. I mean, when you went into those last few games, and boy, it was a struggle to get, you know, double-digit points. I mean, scoring 10 points.
Oh my gosh.
Didn't seem like there was much of a plan. offensively when things weren't working. They didn't seem to do what they needed to do, change it up, make an adjustment. I don't know. I mean, a lot of this, you know, I know a lot of Steeler fans are frustrated with Randy Feuchner at the offensive coordinator. Some people point to, well, look what he had to work with. The offensive line wasn't doing much. He didn't have much to do at quarterback, but it just seemed like they need, to your point, they need to do something different, and they never did anything
correct.
Different. And that's frustrating.
And part of it is, and we all know that football is the ultimate team sport. And what happened, and I said this right in the midst of the, you know, the Duck dynasty, you know, when he had won a couple of games and, you know, people are getting the Duck hats and everybody's all wearing number 6 jerseys. And I said, guys, this is going to sound, this was on my radio show. I said, I'm not a Debbie Downer. You guys know I'm a very optimistic guy. But I also said, I'd love to take a look at things realistically. And I said, Duck does not have an NFL arm, and NFL defenses are going to know that, and they're going to play him accordingly. And it's going to be very difficult to score points and move the football when you don't respect the opposition's quarterback's arm. You know, all of a sudden the safeties are cheating up. The corners are playing, you know, they're just waiting to jump a route. When a quarterback cannot get the ball in tight spaces in a quick amount of time, you're not effective in the NFL. The Duck has played his last regular season down in the NFL. I hate to be that guy that's throwing that out there, but I'm throwing it out there because it's true. He is never going to see another down of regular season football in the NFL. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. So, and I think we all sort of realized it. It was a great story. And I was one of the guys who ran out and bought a, you know, Hodges jersey. It was a great story. And I was rooting hard for the kid.
I wanted the happy ending. We didn't get the happy ending.
Yeah.
Great story, but not a happy ending.
Yeah, but, you know, and to your point, going into the last game against the Ravens, it was clear, right? You know, I mean, he had lost his job back to Mason Rudolph and then the injury and all that. But I don't know. I mean, you knew what you had or didn't have in him. Why wasn't there, you know, hey, let's give Paxton Lynch a shot. I mean, what else have we got to lose?
Why not?
Give this kid.
Nothing. Right.
Yeah. Nothing.
I mean, he was a former first round pick. He has a legitimate arm. And I just remember, like, when Mason came in to that Jets game, and all of a sudden you saw a zip on the ball, and you saw all of a sudden they're moving the ball down the field. I'm like, will people please tell me they saw that? Because I was getting into all these, you know, pretty good debates on the air. I'm like, you guys just don't get it. I know Mason really struggled, but you have to understand the circumstances. An hellacious hit, knocked cold. He really was just kind of spooked for a little bit. And you have to understand, they put a first round grade on Mason Rudolph, even though they got him in the third round. No one else seemed to think that he had all that skill that the Steelers did. And sometimes, you know, it's a subjective business, as we know. But no one drafted Duck. The Steelers cut Duck in August. Not one team put him on a practice squad. Not one team even had an interest. Not one single entity thought that he had a future in the NFL. That's not a mistake. That's not by chance. That's the reality of the fact that he doesn't have an NFL arm. Mason Rudolph, who I saw dismantle Pitt when he was at Oklahoma State a couple of times, I think he threw for like 800 yards and 10 touchdowns in each game against Pitt. And I'm like, oh my gosh, has this guy got a gun? I mean, he's an NFL arm. I mean, there's a big difference. And I love the Duck story as much as you did, Chris. I did. I loved it. I was cheering for him. I was rooting for him. I mean, I'm thinking, here we have the reincarnation of Bubby Brister. But one thing Brister, man, he had a cannon. The Bubster had a cannon. I mean, he wasn't the most popular, you know, Pittsburgh quarterback ever, but he could throw the football. Make no mistake about it. Remember, he went to Denver, and when Elway got hurt, I think he went 7-2. And got a Super Bowl ring in Denver because he could throw it. I mean, he could really, really throw the football. And to me, Mason Rudolph and, you know, Art Rooney came out yesterday and said, we are comfortable with Mason Rudolph as our backup going forward. And Steeler Nation's losing their minds. Didn't he see what happened last year? Blah, blah, blah. He had the strangest, unluckiest, injury plagued weirdness that you could ever have in one short span of football games. I am anxious to see. I mean, obviously, if the Steelers have any designs on another run at a Lombardi, Ben's going to have to be effective and stay healthy. That's how you win Super Bowls. You have franchise quarterbacks, you know, that get you there. And if Ben goes down again or if his elbow isn't sufficient, they're going to be in trouble. It's not going to work out well for the Steelers if Mason Rudolph, you know, starts more than 10 games for the Steelers. That's probably not going to be good. He's not ready for that, but he is capable. The thing I like about Mason Rudolph, he's capable of being a strong NFL quarterback. Unfortunately, the Duck isn't. So that to me is okay. I'm comfortable with Mason as the backup. And of course, we're all anxious to see when Ben starts throwing, how he looks at OTAs, how he looks at minicamp, how he looks obviously in training camp. You know, Terry Bradshaw, that was a million years ago, but it was an elbow injury that ended his career. So
right.
I think you're a little leery of a, you know, I mean, I love the fact that we have now, you know, the Tommy John phenomenon in baseball. Guys get 2 or 3 more miles per hour of velocity when they get Tommy John surgery. So hopefully Ben comes back, you know, maybe it'd be like, you know, Steve Austin, the $6 million man. Maybe, you know, they rebuild him. I don't know.
So, but to that point, Paul, if, you know, they when they take the, you know, all the bandages and casts off and this and that, and, you know, we get to February and Ben throws and it's not perfect. And, you know, well, you know, we'll see, right? Let's, you know, it's not great yet, but, you know, we got some more time until we get to OTAs, and then we got some more time before we get to training camp. Can the Steelers afford to wait? I mean, do you look at an Andy Dalton or somebody like that and go, you know what, look, we got this defense is really, really good. To your point earlier, this could be a Super Bowl defense, but you know, Joe Hayden's only got so many more years left in him. You know, these guys, you know, free agents are going to happen. We can't sign everybody. Do we really have to take a run at? We need a veteran backup quarterback or veteran quarterback in camp if this thing goes south with Ben.
The issue is, can they afford one?
Right.
You want to tag Bud Dupree. You want Hargrave, you know, to bolster that D-line. So they have some very difficult decisions to make. I think, you know, Art II was very adamant about, you know, Mason's our guy. And he had kind of a freaky, flukish year. And if he's healthy, you know, he could be our Charlie Batch. He could be a guy that, when needed, could step in and win a game or two for us. And that, if you want to be a serious contender, that's all you're ever going to ask your backup quarterback to do. You know, granted, we saw what Philadelphia did a couple of years ago. Granted, that happened, but that's an outlier. That's the exception, not the rule. If you want to make a strong run at a Lombardi, your franchise or star quarterback is going to have to start the majority of the games. However, you may need, and I mean need, not just have the luxury of, you may need a backup quarterback to get in there and win a couple games. And I'm with Art II. And I believe that Mason Rudolph can be that guy. And I'm like maybe one of two people in Pittsburgh that believes that. Me and Mason. We're the only two.
Appreciate it.
Bob, questions for Paul?
Hey, Paul, anytime we talk to a TNT Hall of Famer, it's a special night. And thanks for joining us again.
Oh,
and,
my pleasure.
I'm going to stay on that. Yeah, I'm going to stay on that same topic. Paul, I've been wanting to talk to you for last month because of the so many people I've run into this year, maybe at least before the Jet game, said that this may have been Mike Tomlin's best coaching job. I mean, it's a 500 team. Yeah, it's post Le'Veon, it's post Antonio, Big Ben going down. What is your spin on that? Did he do an exceptional job? Was it average? I thought it was decent.
Yeah, I'd give him like a B, like a solid B, not a B plus, not a B minus. I'd give him a solid B. He called for a fake punt that the punters only one that thought the fake was still on. Remember that? They
yeah.
still sneaked out a win in that game. To me, when people would call my show and say, you know, Mike Tomlin should be, I go, coach of the year. That was his call. He owned that call and said he called for that fake punt in that situation. That eliminated his coach of the year status. You can't do that in that situation. And then losing to the Jets how they did, that was not coach of the year status either. So he had a solid B. I mean, he was dealt some really difficult situations, handled them well. And now that we've seen, you know, today, Drew Rosenhaus, you know, officially parted ways with Antonio Brown. I mean, he said if he gets counseling and gets his life straightened out, I'd be happy to take him back. But in the meantime, I want nothing to do with this clown. So I was very critical of Tomlin for not having a stricter guideline for AB when he was part of the, you know, part of the program. In hindsight, Mike Tomlin did a masterful job to keep that guy eligible and on the field and scoring touchdowns. I mean, he had a 5-year span with the Steelers where arguably it was the best 5 years of any receiver in the history of the NFL. So I got to give Mike Tomlin credit for that because AB is about as unstable a human being you're ever going to come across. So while I was critical of Tomlin after the fact, now that I've seen just who AB is, I'm pretty impressed that Tomlin got what he did out of him.
And Paul, staying on the topic of knuckleheads and the AFC North, I have to get your opinion on the Cleveland Browns. Chris and I touched a little bit about this. New coach in place, young guy going into this clubhouse, this locker room that's kind of unstable, kind of a lot of hotheads, whatever you want to call them. The Freddie Kitchens thing probably should have never happened, but is this franchise ever going to get it right, Paul?
It doesn't appear that that even has a chance. Continuity, stability, you know, the kind of the hallmark of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've had three coaches in the last 100 years. I mean, it's crazy that it's basically in my lifetime, it's been Chuck Noll, Bill Cowher, and now Mike Tomlin. And those guys have had rough periods. You know, Bill Cowher into the Hall of Fame, which is, I think, a bit of a stretch as much as I love Coach Cowher. I mean, he had three losing seasons. I mean, he had some rough years, some 6 and 10 years, but Cleveland doesn't get it at all. They seem to have the quarterback in place. I think Baker has the talent that you want. Certainly doesn't have the mentality or the leadership that you need from that position. But if you're going to just, you know, if you're going to have a turnstile for head coaches, you will never, ever have success. Ever.
Paul, I want to change gears a little bit. Want to get your thoughts on the Penguins. They certainly look really, really good right now. I mean, a team that went 18-6-4 without Sid, and he comes back Tuesday night and against the Wild and was just as outstanding as ever. And Tristan Jarry is looking great.
Kind of an all.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, barring injuries, you know, to Malkin or Sid again or that sort of thing, but. Boy, this team looks like they could make a Stanley Cup run.
Yeah, they are as well coached. And you want to talk about, you know, everybody pulling in the same direction. Everybody right now, they're down 3-1 to the Bruins, which isn't sitting well with me, but that's okay. They're not going to win them all. They are right now the benefactor of just tremendous. I mean, what Brian Rust is doing, and keep in mind, I mean, they have Brian Dumoulin coming back. They have Schultz coming back. They have really been beset by more injuries probably, and they have lost more man games than any team in the NHL. And they weren't just average players. I mean, they were, you know, Sidney Crosby missing, you know, an entire 2 months for the mess, you know, for the most part. So yeah, they're an incredible story. But as we know, we're still, you know, think of it as a marathon. We're just past the halfway point. We're about the 13-mile mark of a marathon. So there's so much that can happen. But to me, you know, getting Dumoulin back, getting Schultz back, the way Jari's playing, you know, Matt Murray's going to at some point be needed and I think be there when needed. I mean, here's a guy that already has 2 Stanley Cups, you know, on his resume. So, yeah, I think they're going to be a force. They did not like that 4-game sweep that they suffered to the Islanders last year. That was embarrassing to them. So they came back with a sense of purpose. They came back with their pride really hurt. And, you know, I think both Sid and Gino, they might have another 3, maybe even 4 years left, but that opportunity doesn't last forever. And, you know, they've tasted, you know, the absolute thrill of victory and they want it. And you can just see, you know, and as much as I really enjoyed Phil Kessel, the 2-time Stanley Cup champion, you can't get a message across when one of your star players doesn't buy in. And as good as Phil Kessel was on the power play and as many goals as he scored, he did not buy into two-way hockey. He did not buy into being defensively responsible. He didn't buy into it. So as a coach, you're undermined by a star player. You can't really be effective when that's the case. So as much as, you know, the tribute when Arizona came into Pittsburgh, they gave him his video tribute and everybody went crazy and everybody loves Phil. They're a much better unit. They're, you know, they play as five person units when they're out there together. And it doesn't matter what line's out there, what defensive pairing's out there. They're all in unison. They're all playing well together. And it's fantastic to watch. They are so much fun to watch. And what they did without Sid in the lineup was unbelievable.
Well, I also want to get your thoughts on the Pirates. There's a, you know, they changed leadership, right? They hired Ben Sherrington at GM. They hired Derek Shelton as a manager. So there's that newness. Can Pirate fans get excited about the upcoming season or as long as they got Bob Nutting there as the owner and they're not going to spend any money and it's all about, you know, lining his pockets, is everything else just sort of window dressing for more of the same?
Well, the fans have really turned to, as long as Nutting's the owner, they don't have a chance. I mean, that's kind of the sentiment, the general sentiment of the Pirate fan base. However, what they've done, they've raided the Red Sox and found an absolute winner who actually did player development in Toronto after his time in Boston. So that is a tremendous. What you hear about the new manager is just general, you know, love and respect throughout the entirety of baseball. Then they go and they grab a president from the Pittsburgh Penguins, probably one of the most successfully run organizations in professional sports. They do everything first class. They do everything the right way. So they certainly have, I think, the front office in place. They don't have the horses. They don't have the pitching. They don't have enough players to really, and I think Vegas has it right. I mean, the over-under right now on the Pirates is 70. And that's to me kind of who they are. They're like a 70 win team. And that's not a whole lot to get excited about. I mean, it's not awful. I mean, they have Detroit and Baltimore at 55. I mean, that would be worse, but they're about a 70 win team. And that's hard to get excited about.
Yeah. Do you see the philosophy changing? Do you think Nutting's going to spend any money? Are they going to try to do something, or is this a team that's just going to continue to try to build through the draft, and we hope these guys develop, and maybe, you know, by the time we get to 2028, we got a good team?
I think they're going to definitely have to change a little bit. I mean, we've seen since that little playoff run, 13, 14, and 15, which really was so exciting and so much fun. The Cueto game against the Reds, one of my favorite sporting experiences of my entire life. It was that electric and exciting. They have lost an average of 4,500 fans per game since 2015.
Wow.
And financially, while TV revenue, the revenue sharing, the luxury tax, and all those things do indeed make this a very profitable situation for Bob Nutting in Pittsburgh, why would you want to leave that kind of revenue at the gate? Why wouldn't you want to spend a little money? I mean, Bob Nutting's obviously a very smart man. He's lost more money on a daily basis than I'll ever make in my life, for heaven's sakes. So obviously he's a very smart man. But most smart business people will tell you, you need to spend money to make money. So you look at Milwaukee. I mean, right now, you know, that National League Central is loaded. I mean, the Cardinals, the Cubs, I mean, even the Reds, I think the Reds are going to be, they have them at 82 wins in Vegas over under. They went out and spent some money. The Brewers are really getting competitive, you know, with Yelich and everybody else. They've gone out and found players and spent money. You can't expect your fans to support you when you don't even appear that you care about winning. You don't even make like a token effort to show your fan base that you care about winning. And that's awful. So I think the philosophy indeed has to change, guys. I think it has to.
Bob, one more for Paul before we let him go.
Yeah, well, I know it's a huge topic, Paul, but, you know, I thought I had been disappointed as much as I could be after all the steroid era and everything. And now, of course, this week with the sign stealing scandals and managers being fired, you know, baseball seems to survive all these hits and people keep coming back. Just your thoughts quickly on the Astros, the Red Sox, everything that's happened this week so far. I know it's a huge topic. We could probably do a whole show on it.
Oh, sure. One thing I'll say, and I'll give Commissioner Manfred and his, you know, his group tremendous amount of credit. I mean, they acted swiftly. They acted strongly. Unlike Roger Goodell in the NFL, I mean, think about it, guys. If you know what pitch is coming, how does that help you as a hitter? If you know what blitz is coming, how does that help you as a quarterback? I mean, the similarities are so eerily similar, yet, you know, the NFL, they destroy the evidence. They kind of wanted to sweep everything under the rug. They wanted to move on from it. And, you know, now we even have this year, the Patriots, you know, still up to their shenanigans. I think what Major League Baseball has done, and even with Carlos Beltran, you know, today, they're not messing around. And I think that's tremendous. We have always known that there's so much at stake. There's so much money on the line. People are going to do whatever they can to win. I'm not a big fan of the line. If you're not cheating, you're not trying, but I get it. You know, I do understand that mentality. I don't respect it. I don't like it. I don't like people that work so hard. Like, it's like people that you went to school with that would spend hours putting together little cheat sheets for the test. I would just say to those guys, you know, if you just studied, it would be a lot easier. You know, why not read the material and study? I mean, it's not that hard. You know, you just spend hours writing, you know, the smallest thing. You know, I mean, just that kind of stuff's silly to me. But now, I mean, with Altuve, I mean, it's going, I don't know where it's going to stop, but Major League Baseball is going to do whatever it can to cleanse itself of this scandal. And I respect the heck out of that.
Paul, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can stay up to date with all the great things that you're doing and follow you on social media.
PAlexander44 on Twitter. I send some fun stuff out there sometimes on Instagram and Facebook, and spend a lot of time on the weekends on 93.7 The Fan. You can check that out too, all over the country on radio.com, and just check out 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. And talking Pittsburgh sports is one of my absolute passions, guys. You know that.
Paul, thank you so much. Always a privilege for us to get to spend some time with you. We appreciate it, you know, your time. We appreciate your patience, and we appreciate the fact that you're a TNT Guest Hall of Fame, and you continue to come back and share your insights with us. You're fantastic.
You guys are the best. How did Pittsburgh Dad do for you guys tonight?
Oh, he was
terrific.
Fantastic. Kurt was great. A lot of fun. God
he
knows.
He is an absolute gem. He's one of the funniest people I've ever met. I was so excited to see that you guys had him on tonight. That's awesome.
Yeah, really looking forward to getting him back. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's
take care,
he's
Paul. All the
work.
Best to you and your family.
All right, guys. God bless.
Stay well, Paul.
Take care.
See you, Paul.
Bye-bye.
That's the great Paul Alexander. And as we say every single time we finish with him, Bob, it doesn't get any better than Paul and Pittsburgh sports. God, I'd love to have that guy as part of the show.
He is the go-to guy, Chris, and, you know, he's passionate about it, but he puts a lot of thought behind everything he does, and that's a true professional right there.
All right, on the other side of this quick station break, Bob and I will be back. We'll be turning on our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive here. Two more great stories about guys out there doing great things in their communities. Hang with us.